have to be given to understanding how it was that Paro allowed a total destruction of his country and still insisted to keep the Jewish people there. It's very, very hard to understand. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu went to him and said, I'm a shliach from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm telling you that Hashem says to let his nation go, and if you don't let him go, I want to show you that he's a very powerful God. And he shows him the matah, it turns into a snake, and then he eats Paro's matah that he turned into a snake, and then he puts his hand in and it comes like a tzaras and it goes away. No, that's not such a kasha. You're telling me that he's not a Yerei Shemayim? That's not a kasha. So of course he continued. But after that came Dan. You have to understand what Mitzrayim was. Mitzrayim was the nation that controlled basically all of the civilized world. After the 7 years of Rav, of famine, they basically went ahead and owned all the land and all the people. So they were able to be the elite in medicine. They could either they had the universities or the schools or the doctors. They were the elite in technology. They were the most powerful place in the world. Comes along the Makkah of Dan. Okay. So he does. Comes the Makkah of Dan. Okay, he wants to be stubborn, won't let him go. When the Dan went away, the Dan was being held. It was either going through, the water was going either through pipes or any drainage systems they had, or vessels. They weren't made for carrying Dan. Blood is a lot thicker. So what happened? Things broke. The amount of hezek, just because the dam went away, the Mitzrayim wasn't back to normal. When it came to Tzradeya, every time they tried to smash a frog and they hit a wall, the hole still stayed there. After a while, why didn't he get rid of them? Go! He had a free labor of 600,000 people. After a while, it's not worth it. Why would Paro insist on keeping Klal Yisrael there? How far can someone's ego go? Till you're going to go bankrupt? Mitzrayim was so devastated that after the Yetzias Mitzrayim, we don't hear about Mitzrayim for 1,000 years in the Nevi'im. So why did he do that? Why did it make sense to him? It seems like it doesn't make any sense. And a person needs to understand that is the answer. It doesn't make any sense. The method and technique of the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, is confusion. The goal of the Yetzer Hara is to make what seems to be virtuous, what seems to be good, foolish, and what seems to be foolish to be good and heroic. And this is a very, very, very important yesod. A person needs to understand it and believe it to be matzliach in life, to take on any of his challenges. And I'll give you a couple examples that we see. In this city, there is a couple of professional sports teams. There is one of the sports teams that had a very, very, very loyal fan. This fan died, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. People were so impressed by this fan that one of the people in the state legislature decided that it would put in a proposal that after his death, they should have the flags on this by the state capitol at half mast as a sign of Avelis. Because what this individual showed everybody was something that no one had shown, and the lessons that can be learned from this fan are valued to all of Colorado. Who was this man? He was the barrel man. Now, I'm telling you, it's true. Anyone who has seen any pictures, you see a fellow, he is wearing cowboy boots, a cowboy hat, he's wearing briefs, he got for himself a special design for him, barrel. It had nothing on top, nothing on the bottom. He put suspenders on it, and he wore it. What was so special about him? Silas Nefesh. He was out there in the 90 degrees with the sun blasting down on him in that same uniform. And if in December there was a game and it was a blizzard and wind chill 20 degrees below zero, he went with the same uniform. And this is a fellow that shows up Mesiras Nefesh. He's focused, he has a goal, he has a purpose. And for therefore, we should go ahead and we should show the Avelis to understand what we lost. The problem is, they said no, because he didn't work for the state or he didn't represent the people, and therefore they don't do it. How is that Shayach? The Teretz says, the Satan makes what's foolish virtue. Now you can say that's by Goyim. A bunch of Goyim go to a football game, so it means a lot to them. But by us, it's such a thing would never ever happen. Can you imagine going home for Shabbos? And your mother asks you, do you have a Dvar Torah? So you say no. I said, you don't have a Dvar Torah? So what do you mean? What do you mean you don't have a Dvar Torah? He goes, I didn't pray a Dvar Torah, I don't have one. I learn a whole day, I learn all the time, I come home for the Shabbos, I want to chill, I don't want to have a Dvar Torah. So your mother says something along the lines of, well, if I wanted to chill, there'd be no meal, and there'd be no meal, right? So I mean, you know, the Shabbos doesn't come by itself, so why don't you have a Dvar Torah? So, isn't that, you know, my expectation is that you should have a Dvar Torah, and it gets escalated a little bit from there. So you say, okay, I'm going to take Dvar Torah, that's it. Okay, you ready for the Dvar Torah? Here's the Dvar Torah. It's right to the Parashat Bo'i. Bo'i is a base, is a two. Aleph is an aleph, the one. Two and one. Do you need a calculator? Okay, it's three. Okay, there are three markets in this parasha. You're happy? And then your father answers back and says, and if I would make the Zuda like this, your cholent and gefilte fish and soup would all be in one together. That's what it would look like. Now, can you imagine? Now, Lamais, if you think about it, someone who does that's a real stinker. Let's say you didn't prepare Dvar Torah. Imagine if you would have said like this. Yeah, I want to tell you something. I didn't prepare Dvar Torah. But I had this thought in my mind that has been following me the whole week. Do you know that a parsha is not just a parsha? The name of the parsha is an uptight of the whole parsha. And let me give you an example. Parsha's Boy. The gematria of Parshas Bo'i is three. Do you know there were three makas in Parshas Bo'i? If sure it's possible that Parshas Bo'i, these three makas, were equal to all seven other makas. Now we know it's not true, but maybe she doesn't know the Chazal that says that makas b'chayvus was shoved to everything else, so it's quite wrong. But let's pretend it's true. And therefore, that is why in the Parsha, there are only three makas. Because its name, its uptight, is three. And a parsha of the Torah is like a person, like the name of a person, and it means more than just the tight. It's the uptight of the mensch. And your mother looks back at you and says, it's a very nice Torah. And then you hear her telling your father, I see how he's really, really steiging. What is the chiluk? The chiluk is that one, on the first, you decided, you tell me for Dvar Torah, I'm not going to give you the hanah of a Dvar Torah. And the other one is, I taka don't have a Dvar Torah, but Lamaisa, I can learn a little bit better than her, so I'm going to give her a snow job, and I'm going to try my hardest that she should feel that I'm saying something, and machshav her. Look at that tremendous value. But the Satan wouldn't allow you to do that. Why? Why would this, what would block you from giving hanah from your parents? What would stop you from doing that? Only, it doesn't make any sense. Fakert, you may get a bigger payoff. Maybe the next check will be even bigger. Maybe your father will speak to one of his business associates and buy a raffle ticket. I mean, you never know what your payoff could be, right? And why could you be so foolish to let that slip right through your hands, that opportunity? The Teretz says, it doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense? It doesn't make sense because the Satan is not a secholdic thing. He goes ahead and tells you something that's virtuous, that's choshev, that's important, like Torah, and he makes it foolish. They're going to say to that parent, now this is a meal. It's not for learning. This is for eating. What kind of stupidity? As a matter of fact, if a suda was for learning, you'd serve svarim. Right? You have a big riot, right? So you know you're smarter. The satan confuses you to think like a mensch. A person goes ahead, would like to discuss the topic of snitching. It's a good topic. A bocher comes over and says, so-and-so did something, right away, choshteyu. What shaychus do you have to that maisa? How does it affect you? It doesn't. I just want to tell you that so-and-so is doing this. Thank you very much. I'm not talking about that. A bocher goes over and says, someone's bothering me. So either he's embarrassed to tell the guy, or he told the guy and he doesn't have enough seichel to pick up on it. So he goes over to a Rebbe and he tells the Rebbe that so-and-so's bothering me and I can't live with it anymore. So what happens? So the fellow's called in by someone in the yeshiva and says, listen, I want to make something very clear. You're bothering someone and you should have enough seichel to stop bothering them. Now, I don't know if you realize how much you're bothering them, so please stop. That's the whole conversation. Efshe included, and if you choose to continue, you won't be able to stay here. What's the big? That's the whole thing. So what does the guy in his chachma go? He goes over to the person and he goes, snitch. He's a snitch. What do you mean he's a snitch? And this happens in yeshivas all over. A guy is trying to go ahead and avoid machlokes. So he's having someone intervene that they shouldn't be right of him. And yet, they call him a snitch. Not only that, the fellow that goes around calling this other guy a snitch, he goes around like he's the nirdos. This is very seichelic. Imagine a guy goes to a doctor and his health is very poor. And the doctor says, so new, you're here for your 6 month checkup, so how are things going? He goes, well, I'm not feeling so well, I have to be honest. The exercise program we discussed, I'm not so on it, I have to get back on a little bit more. He goes, what about smoking? I haven't touched a cigarette, no way, no, I gave that up. Very good. He goes ahead, does a physical, does x-rays, and then he brings the x-rays and says, listen, I want to tell you something. These x-rays show your lungs are full of smoke. What do you mean you stop smoking? You want to tell me that parts are damaged and they're getting worse, okay, but the smoke would be gone. So he goes, okay, so I admit I was smoking. Okay, I'm just telling you, you have to have seichel over here. If you're not, you're going to get in trouble. You're not going to live much longer. He goes, very good. Before he leaves, he goes over to the x-ray machine and goes, snitch! And then he goes over to the technician, and you're no better. And then he leaves. Right? So what is he looked at? Like a hero? It's the exact same thing. It's the exact same thing. What happened? Elamai, the Yetzer Hara and Satan have no position and no lokum there. So of course the guy's a mishiganah. But someone is being roided and blocking someone else from their growth and their steiging, and they're going ahead and they're blocking them from growing, so the Satan does get involved there. Rosh Hashivas, they're only interested in money. Don't bring a riot. They make a dinner, and they never invite the Bachman. All they care about is money. Since it's not the thing, right? I heard from a Mechanech, which I hear the story very, very well. Bochrim should never, ever, ever, it's very unhealthy for Bochrim to be at a dinner. And the reason is, because they have all these yo-yos that are there, that they get the greatest attention and covet from the Rosh Hashivas, and they barely keep Shabbos, barely anything, and a Bochrim who's sitting alone, he doesn't get it, he can't understand the difference, and it hurts him, it bothers him, it's not good for a Bochrim to see. But let me ask you a question, what is a dinner for? What's a dinner for? The Rashivas decided that they want to have a very, very fancy, fancy food. So Pasdish to go make it for themselves. So instead they came up with Chachma. They'll make it for 500 people and they'll eat too. Like, what do you think they're making a dinner for? What do you think the dinner's for? Can you imagine you go into a dentist's office and they go, so new, how are your teeth? Thinker! All you care about is my teeth. What about my toe? So the dentist says, I thought it was gonna do a root canal on your toe too, but I first want to discuss your teeth. You go to a dentist for your teeth. You go to a dinner to raise money. Well, for that, the guys have kindness. For this, he'd be a mishigana. How come? Because the sultan is mekatrik when he can. The Gemara in Chelek says something very interesting. It says one of the simanim of the Geula of Mashiach coming is that when someone does something, Amamar, my v'sarmi ra, mishtoylo v'amri, so he says, my v'sarmi ra, mishtoylo v'amri adabai. If Shila would call me, sarmi ra, mishtoylo. Anyone who goes away from doing bad is considered a fool. That's a sign that the Geula has to come. Because the world has sunk so heavily that a person is not able to realize, and it's normal for people to accuse someone of doing something good, saying they're crazy. A person needs to understand that the Satan confuses you. So I'll ask the Akasha like this. We know the rules of the Yetzer Hara from Cain. The Rebbe Hashem told Cain like this. He says, "Imoy seitev la pesach chatas roivets." The Satan, the Yetzer Hara, is waiting, crouched, ready to trample on you, ready to take you down by the doorstep. Ve'elecha tishukasu, and he's going to cling to you. You are not going to get away from him. He will cover you, and he'll be over you, and he'll follow you, and you will never get away. So if you can ask me, so if the Satan is able to confuse you, so now I'm confused. How is a person ever able to beat the Satan? How can we conquer the Yetzer? It's impossible. So the pasuk says, "Va'ata timshol ba." With Siyata Dishmaya, what will happen is you will conquer and you will rule over the Yetzer Hara. The amount of Siyata Dishmaya you get is the amount that you make an effort for. The amount you are focused to be Matzliach is the amount of Siyata Dishmaya you get. And unfortunately, the aggressiveness and how rooted the Rishis is exactly the amount of Siyata Dishmaya and Ratzon you're going to need to conquer it. If you want to accomplish, you can only accomplish with the effort that you go ahead and you put in. But if you're focused, you are given that Siyata Dishmaya. Many years ago, I needed an attorney for something. All I needed was someone to file papers. I called up 3-4 attorneys, $500. Ridiculous. A tremendous amount of money. I decided, I asked somebody, you know, a guy who will just do papers, and just to do the papers. I don't want a whole thing. I have a guy, he does it cheap, and if it's not a major thing, and it's not very, very technical, he's good. I call up this guy, his name is Lou Maroney. Lou Maroney comes in, and he tells me, yeah, no problem. He says, can I come to your office? No, I'll come to you. Anyway, make up a time, he comes up in this truck, more of a bicycle than a truck. In cash value. It still looked like a truck. But whatever, and he comes in, and he's not dressed in fancy clothes, and he walks in, and he comes into the house, and he goes, you're Jewish. I said, yeah. I knew he was smart right then and there. He says, oh, I that's a question, this and that. It says crossing himself on his own. Gosh, it says darshaning. Okay, here we go. So he comes and he goes, what can I help you with? He fills it out. He fills out the paper for me. Very good. He charged me $60. I need a favor from you. I said, what do you need? My mother-in-law recently died. I guess it's all. What favor do you need? My mother. Anyway, she was a very, very holy lady. And we know that she was protected because she had something in a safe in the attic. And we tried very hard, and my wife and I, we are the ones that are inheriting that. And we opened it up. And we opened it up. We saw it. We trembled. And we want you to be able to decipher and tell us its secrets. Figured he had the menorah, he had the urn, what did he have? He had the katayrus. What did he have? Okay, no problem when you want to come. Okay, can we come? Yeah, okay. It's okay. Tomorrow. Okay, I'll be here tomorrow. Very good. Comes with him and his wife, and I see him outside the way there taking this box like it was. You couldn't touch it. They were taking it to carrying in, they brought it, and they put it on the table. They said, said, thank you, Abba. Very good. And they crossed themselves again. And they pull it up, and it was this painting. And they said, this is it. Tell us its secrets. So look at the painting. It's a picture of a scene in Europe, a butcher, a kosher butcher, cutting up meat, giving it to a kosher customer. And on the back, by the window, it had these words, Busser Kosher. Okay? Very good. Can you decipher the secrets of the painting? Oh, it's a big risk. I don't know. I want to tell you one. Put it back in the box. I just want to tell you one thing. I promise you, if you take care of the painting, it will take care of you. I don't hear from them for a year. All of a sudden I get a call. Out of nowhere. I get a call, Mamash, out of nowhere. Rabbi, you were right. I didn't know the number, no, nothing, this and that. Nothing. Okay, very good. Next. Right. I figured he's trying to sell me something. Let me call my rabbi, you're right. Right. Okay, very good. What is it, this man? This is Lou Maroney. You have no idea how our life is and everything's good. And we guarded the painting and everything's good. But we have this emergency. What's this emergency? There is this fellow, and his wife just passed away. And my wife, what she is she's at home care nurse. And she is there, and his wife just passed away, and he asked us. He wanted my wife to say over to him the rites, the Jewish rites. And I don't know them what to say, and I don't know anything. And he brought me this English prayer book, and I said the Kaddish, and we did it. But you have to visit with the guy. Okay, very good. I'll visit him. Okay, I go visit the guy. The guy tells me a story. Him and his wife, they used to play for the Denver Symphony Orchestra in the 60s. And they were chosha musicians, him and his wife. And the orchestra wanted to keep them heavily. What they did was they bought them a house, and they gave them a lot of things to keep them not to move, because they were trying to take them to other places. What happened was, they had one son, and their son, at 25 years old, died in a car accident. And they were tremendous grief from it. So they went to the temple, and the rabbi at the temple said, we have $1.5 million. We want to give a third to the temple in memory of my son. I want whatever you could do to make the best as a memory of my son. The rabbi said, no problem. What we are doing and we're working on, and it's obviously a godsend that you came, and we are making a library. And in this library, we are making an interfaith library, comparing all the religions one to the other. And we feel the greatest thing you could do is, we will dedicate this library in honor of your son. So he says, Rabbi, are you sure? Something was no good. He felt it was no good. So he went ahead, I'm telling you it's the best thing. The guy goes ahead and does it. The shaman at the temple, who was a shaman's person, heard what he said and called him over afterwards. And he said, it's a wonderful thing to give to the, didn't want to lose his job, he wanted to give to the library, but I want you to know something. Go call the yeshiva and they'll say Kaddish for him. They'll charge you $18 and every year they'll say the Kaddish for him and then they learn for him, and that's also good for your son. And the guy did it. After a while he realized that was most probably what he should do. And it bothered him so much that he went ahead and he gave that money for such a thing that didn't make any sense. He wasn't a Shemesh Shabbos, he didn't know anything. In the end, his wife was Nifter, it was during the Shiva, he didn't even have a Shiva. He made sure one thing, he had two conditions, that the rabbi from that synagogue, from the temple, cannot visit him. And his other condition was, and he told me this straight, that he wants to give all the money to the yeshiva. In the end, he gave $1 million to the yeshiva, and there's a plaque for him on the wall right outside the bookstore. How was such a yid zoicha to have such a schus? What did he know from? He had a certain amount of gvura and focus that he's going to do it right. and it meant a lot to him, and he was sincere, and it was very, very important for him to go ahead and have an Uli Nishmas, a zichron for his wife and for his son, to have something in this world that should escort him of value into the Olam HaEmes. And he was so focused on that, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent the Shliach, the Shamas happened to have been standing there, that directed him to do something that at least gave some meaning to his life. A person needs to realize that what we're doing and what our focus is can only be done and only accomplished if we put the proper effort in that's needed to come to that goal. Paroi was heavily rooted in his rishis. He wasn't, the Rebbe Yishan wasn't going to give him the siyata d'shmaya because the makas hurt a lot. He had to really mean it to get the siyata d'shmaya. Because if we don't really mean it, what's going to happen is the Satan is going to master his tool of confusion and not allow us to be matzliach in what we need to. Whatever our concerns, whatever our challenges are, if the challenge is to sit and learn three storim, to have a first seder and a second seder and learn a whole day, how am I ever going to do that? How can I live through that? If you don't put in the effort, it can't happen. How can I pay attention and shear? How can I come on time for shacharis? How can I do these things? How can I conquer what's hard for me to do? The only way we get the siyata d'shmaya to given to us is if we put the effort in, what's needed, what's taken, what's done, to conquer that midah that we've worked on to not be matzliach in. We should learn from Paroi's mistakes. His mistake was he was very, very rooted in his rishis. And we should go ahead and learn from that, that ourselves, we should root ourselves deeply in being mesaken, the tikkunin that we have to do. And with that, taka will be zeicha to va'ato timshol boy.